echte ervaring.
You are listening to That Digital Show, a business podcast presented by Google Cloud to help organizations transform and grow value in a digital world. Episode 20, Generating Perpetual Value from IT Investments. Today, we'll take a look at how organizations can generate lasting business value through developing digital strategies that start with the enterprise's culture and are fueled by their IT investments. Hello, everyone. I'm Chris Hood, a digital and business strategist at Google Cloud. Thank you for listening. Joining me today is Eric Ranta. Hi, Eric. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Chris.
So glad to have you here today. Would you mind sharing some of your background with our listeners?
Yeah, I'm a longtime enterprise software practitioner, and the vast majority of that time has been spent in outbound facing roles in this value domain, if you will. How do you get business value out of IT investments broadly, software and technology in particular? I had the pleasure and the delight to work at different companies, former Siebel Systems, had a nice long run at SAP, Workday, and most recently prior to coming to Google Cloud, which I've been here 2 years, it was a small health and well-being software company. So really have thoroughly spent my time in this domain and really trying to tease out what makes companies successful and also conversely, what makes them unsuccessful in these technology and transformation projects.
Wonderful. So we started a new segment called That Digital Download. Have you watched, read, downloaded anything that you'd like to share with everyone?
Yeah, there is a guide that I use. It's in a book form, and it's called How Will You Measure Your Life by Clayton Christensen. And it's a really interesting, and I think introspective read for anybody to go and just really understand what is it that they want to get out of life, whether it happens to be from a professional standpoint or from a personal standpoint. And what it's done for me, Chris, and I read it years ago and I've continued to go back and reread it, is I find that it really helps orient me on the things that are most important and that are part of my value system, and that then I can go and then act upon in everyday life.
Great. We'll have a link to that in the website. So if you want to pick it up and take a look, feel free to go to thatdigitalshow.com and you can check it out. So today we're going to talk a little bit about IT investments and how that impacts business value, helps you reach business outcomes. Maybe a good place to start this conversation is just better understanding, how do you generate enduring business value from the cloud?
Yeah, Chris, this is a conversation I have with a lot of customers on a regular basis. And one of the things that I think before you look at the enduring part of it is like, what is value? Let's take kind of a step back and think about what actually helps create value for the enterprise. And the first one that comes to mind, and there's four primary dimensions, four quadrants, if you will. The first one that a lot of organizations focus on is cost optimization and operational effectiveness. This is typically measured in the P&L. And whether you're at the business unit level, whether you're at a general manager level or an overall level, this is where people oftentimes orient their time, effort, and energy around business value. Now, that's only one part of the equation. And it's typically the one that's heavily scrutinized because it's easily tracked. There's CFOs, controllers who actively manage these things. And that's where our natural business world orients. But I'll submit for any listener here that there's three other elements that are really fundamental and important in creating enduring value for the enterprise. So it's not just optimization. The second element is risk mitigation and compliance. We know we live in a world that has risks all over the place. And those risks need to be considered, they need to be managed, and then we need to show compliance with those. There's an awful lot of value that's created. And in some cases, in some industries, it's one of the primary dimensions, financial services to be one, where risk management has to be one of the things that you do better than anybody else. And so risk mitigation and compliance is another way that you can actually create value for the enterprise. The third dimension of creating value is revenue growth. Every company, every organization has a growth agenda, whether it comes through organic, acquisitive, joint ventures, unique partnerships, different channels. Every company wants to grow. Every company wants to be bigger and be of higher value and higher service to their end customers. And revenue growth is the easiest way to measure that. Your business cases have to include, and the way you create value, it has to include that dimension. How are you going to affect your customer and their customer's business as part of that? And the fourth, I think, is one of them that's far and away the least tangible near term, but perhaps is the most important long term. And you'll hear it throughout the rest of our dialogue today. And it's around strategic enablement. Every company has some sort of ambition that when you get them in a quiet moment, or in some cases, they make this very evident, for a company that they want to be in the future. This can be 5, 10, 20 years out. What is it that they want to stand for? And typically when you ask customers about that longer term vision, they don't talk about their day-to-day operations. They talk about the customer experience or the delivery experience that they have. And they usually don't compare themselves to competitors. They find other leading companies in adjacent industries, and then talk about how they want to be that type of company. So just to recap, four primary dimensions. Most fundamental, cost optimization, risk mitigation and compliance. Third is revenue growth. Fourth is strategic enablement. These are the four dimensions that you have to create value in the enterprise. And it's a combination of those four, or a couple of those four, that actually make demonstrable and enduring value for companies.
It makes sense that these dimensions can help an entire company. But could you apply the same practice to, let's say, a project, or maybe on a smaller scale within the organization?
You're not the first one to ask that, Chris. Oftentimes at the program level, if you're doing a major transformation program or a very significant project that can take months, quarters, even a couple of years, it's easy to capture those four dimensions of value because it makes sense. There's strategic enablement, there's potential of revenue growth, clear compliance, and then obviously cost savings. As you get down to individual projects, they typically tend to get more focused because they're trying to accomplish certain things. If we take that example, as if you're really trying to, people call a lift and shift, or move a technology workload from an on-premise environment or a proprietary data center to the cloud, you're going to be doing that mostly for cost and compliance. Like, it's really tough to say, like, yeah, that's going to help us drive revenue. It will hopefully enable you to build new apps and new capabilities around it. But you really have to look at, what is our project fitting into those dimensions on the individual project level? And then hopefully through a transformation program that covers multiple projects, you will be able to hit upon the four dimensions of value.
I think what's interesting in that is the relationship between these four. So for example, if I'm thinking 5 years out, what my strategic enablement might look like, do we often then associate that future vision with something like, say, cost optimization? It almost seems like they're completely different conversations.
They are interrelated. The question is just, how many links do you need to go through? If you begin with the end in mind, which is a very common term, strategic enablement is a great way to start off with. And then you can compose that into, how would you grow? And what ways would you grow? Would you grow with different models and different businesses than you would today? How would you make sure that you were running an operationally efficient business? How would you make sure that you're delivering your products of quality so that your risk is managed? All of these are interrelated, Chris. And it changes with the context. So what a consumer products company has to do is very different than what a bank has to do. What a manufacturer has to accomplish is very different than what an internet company would have to accomplish. But they are absolutely related. And those are actually the highest quality business cases and the highest quality transformations that we see.
So then if we take near-term investments and we look at that, how do you leverage those investments into longer-term enablers or differentiators?
A very fundamental question that almost every customer we ask for, which is, where do we start? And the natural inclination, I'm not sure if we've been conditioned to this through years and years, is to start small, start with the easiest project, and then grow into that over time. Honestly, Chris, I hold the counter view. I actually think you have to start off with what the biggest problem is, and then figure out how you're actually going to solve for that. Or maybe in a more positive spin, what's our biggest opportunity or potential, and then build to that. But there are three areas that you kind of work with. And I'm a big fan of the McKinsey Horizon model. And for the people that I work with and work for, if I wasn't a big fan of it, they are all big fans. So we would constantly have this. You start off by optimizing infrastructure, which is building the foundation so that you can truly go digital and that you can truly transform. And so in some cases, that's moving workloads over to the cloud. It's around compute, storage, some very fundamental things that you'll see. And once you up-level some of those capabilities, you have the ability to transform the work, the fundamental insights, employee experience, and business continuity through collaboration tools that helps build upon that. And then the last one is, you want to have something that you're building and innovating to. Just about every company that we talk with has some bigger aspiration for greatly enhancing their existing lines of business, or more importantly, creating completely new capabilities built on digital platforms and digital properties that they can go and then innovate. And it's the combination of these three. You know, you work into some of the near term, but you're always keeping in mind where your longer term ambition is.
I think this conversation around the innovation piece is interesting, because when I think about IT investments within an organization, one of the areas that often comes up in conversation is around shadow IT, or in some organizations, it might be called fake IT, stealth IT, rogue IT. It's really this concept of the IT organization is not able to fulfill the needs of the employees. And so the employees or teams go off and buy or produce or get their own technology to do what they need to do. In some cases, this can lead to innovation, but in other cases, it may disrupt the overall IT investment plan.
Yeah, you're talking about a classic trade-off. And part of the reason that shadow IT exists is that there's business units and operating groups that have fundamental things that they need to accomplish. And it's typically around the use of data and the use of capturing data and collecting that and then doing something with that. And most shadow IT that you see come along is really trying to solve a very specific problem or a small set of specific problems. And I think this is the type of world that you have to embrace, because many organizations operate with what I'll call calcified systems, systems that have been in place that take some really, really heavy change management in order to even get some of the simpler of tools. Or they simply can't deliver a digital experience because it's a system that just is incapable of doing so. And so you have these shadow IT teams that create many reactions as well. You can't have shadow IT. You got to go find those and stamp them out. No, no, no. I would submit the exact opposite, Chris. And I think you're in the same wavelength with me. You want to embrace them because they're actually doing unique things that are solving today's problem and the problems that you're going to have in the future, and isn't representative of the way that certain systems or certain IT capabilities were in place. So my view, whenever asked this by a customer, and it comes up from time to time, is to go out and embrace these shadow ITs, try and fundamentally understand what they're doing, because they would rather be solving a business problem. They're only creating the shadow IT so that they can solve that business problem.
One of Google Cloud's products is called AppSheet. And AppSheet is an automation tool that takes data and allows you to create applications without coding. And the term that we use around AppSheet is citizen developer. And I think you touched on it there. Whereas, why would you discourage a vast organization of people who care about the business and want to innovate on behalf of the business and are actively seeking for new ways to bring value to the organization through the technologies that are readily available to them? And if we make those technologies more accessible and easier for them to engage with, in theory, you've got an army of innovators out there that can drive your business forward.
Absolutely. In fact, can we just acknowledge first off that the term citizen developer sounds so much better? It's positive in tone, and it really is about enablement and empowerment. And that's fundamentally what we're trying to do with this entire shift to cloud. And that's not an easy thing to do because we get wrapped up in so many capabilities, but really it's about enabling that individual to go and perform something unique and to do something unique that is of value to some set of users or some audience or some set of customers. And that's really what we're trying to unlock with this entire transformation, which is make sure that you are enabling the people not to be limited by IT, but actually grow and expand and capture four quadrants of value through IT.
So on that transformation, how do you take a disciplined, value-driven approach to make transformation happen?
There's a couple of things that come to mind. And you have to first think about, how are we going to generate value over the long term? And then what is our alternative of not doing this? What is our opportunity cost? What are the risks or the upsides or the downsides that prevent? You really have to take actually a wide look before you can get into that. And that's why I always refer back to the four quadrants of value, because if you have to go and explore each of those four quadrants, it helps you expand your thinking beyond a near-term or tactical problem. The way that I like to look at this is you have to do simple things well. And if there's something for the listeners out there, what we're talking about here is not rocket science, but it's simple things done well and done proficiently. The first thing that you need to do is you really need to understand, what is it that we're trying to solve? You have to spend some time on what is the problem that we're trying to solve. And it's best to do this in a group type of format with various experts and expertise from everywhere. But oftentimes we try and shortchange that question and therefore end up with a very different outcome. Or what challenge are you trying to solve? And let's just take an example. If you're an insurance company, there's a couple of things that you want to do better than anybody else. You want to sell policies. You want to service them from a claims and customer service example, and you want to make sure that you've got great actuary. You do those three things well, you'll be a great company. And you can do everything else kind of average, because those are the differentiating things to your customer. So help really think about what is that fundamental problem that we're trying to solve and make sure that you have a scope that can actually help solve that problem, both in the near term and the long term. The other one that you have to do is you almost have to think like a journalist or a reporter. A reporter who's doing a long piece on a very nuanced or not foreseen topic will go and have dozens, if not hundreds, of conversations. They will go and seek out data sources, do primary research, secondary research, and really try and understand. Within a business concept, we do what we call value discovery workshops. And we're not talking about workshops where you talk about as is versus to be. You're not defining requirements. We ask the fundamental question, what is it that's going to drive the most value for you in this category? Or what would drive the most value? You have to actually, when you really have your scope down, you actually have to ask is like, what is actually going to generate the most value? Just that simple language, because words matter in this, Chris. That simple language allows you to go and actually have a much different conversation because you're thinking about all the potentials and the capabilities. At some point in time, you're going to congeal all of this. And this disciplined approach to value actually then begins to go into a bit of a solutioning. Once you know what your high-level ambitions are, you know what the value drivers are, you know what the potential KPIs you're going to measure. Again, simple things done well. What I've talked about here, they're probably nothing new. You actually have to map it to what is it that's going to help us do this. You're going to want tools that scale. You're going to want tools with maximum flexibility. You're going to want capabilities that help solve and provide that connectivity so that you can go out and reach out to some of those calcified systems, get the information you need, and then render it very, very quickly. And you really have to think about the solutioning aspect. And I would submit that no one person can do the solutioning on their own. It usually takes a village. It takes expertise. And at the end of that solutioning, with all that value discovery that you've done, you can end up putting together a business case. And if you tackle the four quadrants and you've got the cost elements and you've got the risk and compliance elements, you've got the revenue growth, and then you've got how this is going to enable strategic enablement, you can take that plan to any audience and there will be something relevant for them. The last one that I'd say, Chris, that you need to have for a disciplined approach is you need to have a plan for how you're going to get the value and how you're going to track that value. Because if you don't manage it, you obviously can't measure it. That's an old business idiom. But the important thing within an IT context is you're looking at this now like it's a manufacturing plant or any other sort of large fixed asset. You want to sweat that asset. You want to invest and maintain that asset. And you want to make sure that that asset is running at optimal throughput. And that's really where the value realization comes into play. Are we getting the value that we want and build it into your operational metrics and your KPIs? And it doesn't matter what aspect that you're trying to tackle in the business. It can be supply chain. It can be logistics. It can be HR. It can be finance. It can be customer service. It can be sales. All the functions that all of us do in all these companies, if you follow that simple, disciplined approach, you can actually generate demonstrable value for your organization.
So you mentioned it takes a village. In the CIO.com State of the CIO report, they found that 81% of IT leaders agree that CIOs are under extreme pressure to secure their investments and prove ROI. So I'm curious, how much of this is really rooted in the culture of an organization versus the actual investments into IT?
Yeah, and I'll even play one step further, Chris. In that same study, they outlined that there's really no business cases today that are done in business that don't have a strong technology component or technology dependency. So it's like technology's got to be part of all of this. And culture really matters. And it matters from a wide variety of perspectives. First off, what is your company in terms of its mission? And who does it serve? What does it serve? And how does it bring things to market for its customers, for suppliers, for partners, for consumers? Then it has a set of values that it stands for. And then it has the way that it gets those things done. And oftentimes, all those items together in the way that they get things done is really a representative of the culture. And I have seen some phenomenal transformation stories in my career from companies that were in really, really straightforward businesses, but they knew what their customers wanted. They knew what they were capable of. And then in the skills that they didn't have, they went out and grew it. So they were very intentional and pragmatic about their strategy. If we take the converse of that, where these companies are being successful, we've all heard about how these digital programs have failed and it's in the mainstream media and it's in the press and things like that. But if you look at some of the reasons why, it is actually trapped in culture. You have to do things that are culturally appropriate for your organization. If your organization is really good at managing projects and taking things to market, well, you know what? You're going to want to build on that. If your organization is really good at servicing customers, but the operational dependencies on that, you're going to need to be mindful of that. You have to really take that honest reflection. And maybe this even goes, Chris, now that I'm thinking about it, way ahead of what problem are you trying to solve? What is your company good at? And where does it need help? Where does it need a set of partners, a set of providers, a set of vendors, a set of capabilities to actually really help them so that they can be used to overcome some of those cultural obstacles that a company may not be good at or may not have the resources so that that transformation project can be ultimately very, very successful?
Yeah, I've often said that digital transformation is not a technology issue. Digital transformation is a cultural issue. And to back that up, I just received an email from one of our customers with 20 questions of how we could help them. And out of the 20 questions, 20 of them were about how to change their culture, how to set up their organization for success. How can they look at things differently so that they can be positioned to achieve the things they want to achieve? Not a single question was around the technology. So it just goes to show you, we can make and talk about the investments and how these investments can drive business value. But oftentimes, if it's not rooted in, here's what we do well, and here's what we need help with, as you just said, then I think a lot of times they are going to continue to struggle.
I talked about the book at the beginning, which is How Will You Measure Your Life? In reading that, any reader will come away with a very different introspection into the way that they live, the things they value. And we have to do that in the business world. Every one of the businesses that we serve, or heck, even at Google, is tuned around the delivery and taking its capabilities to market. But it takes a quiet moment and serious reflection, and I think introspection, to make sure that you understand what is it that we're going to have to do culturally to actually go and achieve that success. It's not surprising to me, Chris, that's actually a great anecdote. 20 out of 20 questions all talk about how you set up the culture for success. Very common challenge. Companies that are asking that and then are willing to act on it, I think is the differentiating point. We get a lot of companies that talk about it, but are the ones that actually truly act upon that.
So then why Google Cloud? What can Google Cloud bring to the conversation or to the organization, whether it's from an IT or from a value positioning or from just an understanding of your culture? What can we do that drives success in some of our customers?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've got a team of 40 plus people who are working to help customers answer that question every day. We've learned some things along the line, Chris, that I think are worth highlighting, which is how do you actually go and execute on this? And it requires active executive sponsorship. It requires being attached to the three top priorities of the board and the CEO. And then it requires like some what things that are different. Are you truly going to be collaborative? And most organizations would not put this as a strength, so to speak, and we can help them with that. And again, I'm teasing out some research here that we found, and then take a holistic example of the solutions. You're not just trying to solve a tactical near-term problem. You're trying to actually solve something that's probably bigger than you're anticipating, and make sure you know that. We can also help companies with very industry-specific type use cases, which I think is where the differentiation and the real exponential value comes for many organizations. In terms of how do they do those unique things in the core business that makes them different from every other competitor. And if I think about like how Google Cloud can help, Google Cloud has an amazing assortment of properties, product areas, capabilities, products, solutions, things like that. And if you put that aside, what you actually get, and then that's an amazing asset to put aside, you actually get a company that's actually saying, what problem are we trying to solve? Google at large and Google Cloud are all focused on helping solve the business world's biggest problems and being a partner with organizations to go and execute on that.
When you mentioned bringing people together, it made me think of another story. I went in for a value workshop with one of our customers, and we had about 30 people in the room. This was when we were traveling and actually showed up at somebody's location. And we did introductions, and I went around, introduced all of the Google employees that were there to support this activity. And then someone raised their hand and said, I don't know everybody around the table. I assumed that everybody around the table knew each other. But what we discovered was that there was a mix of business representatives and technology representatives. And someone actually said, this is the first time we're ever meeting these individuals. And it was amazing to me to think that in an organization, they had never come together to collaborate on some of these topics that we were there to discuss with them.
And Chris, that anecdote that you provided, I think it could be as much as 50% of our customers, when we get into an engagement, and we're working with them will all of a sudden find that, oh my gosh, I've not met my counterpart on this other side. If done correctly, you can end up with a real catalyst for that transformation, because individuals talking from different functions, talking about the same fundamental problem or opportunity, magic happens. And that's like one of those simple things done well, Chris.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, I think it's time for our question of the day. Okay, here's our question of the day. Hi, Chris. Our company is struggling with reaching some of the lofty business outcomes our leadership is presenting to us. What would you suggest to help us better identify and measure these goals to ensure that we reach the goals? What do you think?
I like the question. And, you know, if you look at kind of the subtext in it, what the person's basically saying is, what can I do to help that my company has stated lofty goals? Leadership has reinforced those through verbal and written and public communication. But what can I do to help? Because oftentimes, I mean, whether you're an individual contributor or a frontline manager or middle management, or heck, in even some cases, some executives, that whole company goal seems very lofty and seems almost intangible because it's so far away. And I think what is a really useful thing to do, and this was taught to me by a customer, it's not, you know, some great management insight, is they really kind of broke down what was in the annual report, what the executives were sharing with the organization and company communications. And they said, okay, of these four or five primary initiatives or primary focus areas or things that the company's really trying to drive, what is it that we contribute to? And just like, let's take that five example. Chris, if you say that you're doing all five, chances are you probably don't. You have to really have to look at what one of these or two of these, or maybe even potentially three of these, do we actually affect, and how would we help go and drive that solution? And it's not rocket science or anything like that. It's actually the thought process of looking at those and saying, what is it that our business unit can do? What is it that our organization can do? Because in the corporate world, a lot of us are used to assuming that some other organization somewhere else has that remit and they've got that thing covered. Well, we all play a role in customer satisfaction. We all play a role in growth. We all play a role in product quality. We've got to think about what are the things that we can affect. And once you can link what those top two areas are, then take the next step and slot all the initiatives that you have. And unless there's a clear driver that that's driving that initiative, you might want to decide if it's really something you need to do at all, or if you need to do with the same level of resource investment. You know, part of the reason leadership puts out these lofty messages is that so people can internalize them. But what do? We make it really tough to internalize that and then put it within our own individual context for whatever our roles are in the company.
I think one of the biggest questions all of us have is, what's my purpose? Why am I here? What am I contributing to? I mean, in my past work experience, there was oftentimes I would go into the office and I'd be like, what am I doing? Why am I here? What am I actually contributing to? So as we've talked about even here today with the citizen developers and the shadow IT and the contribution and insights into what the strategic initiatives are and how I can contribute to that, I think it is critical to know that there is a purpose for you to be there and that you are contributing in some way to generating value for your organization.
Yeah. Chris, I'll even play that one step forward. In that book, How to Measure Your Life, it talks about like the things that truly drive your values versus hygiene factors. And it actually includes things like compensation, benefits, things that are like very important to us as one of the hygiene factors. But it's actually, does the work that you do fulfill your mission? And I think we've all been in roles and in jobs at different points in our career where there was an empty feeling if you didn't feel like it was driving to some sort of big, meaningful impact. That if we stop doing this entirely, nobody would care. And then there's other roles where you're like, if I stop doing this, it's going to have a huge impact. And that's always the one that I think everybody needs to ask themselves on a fairly regular basis, because that introspection is going to get you to a better place.
And I don't think there's a better way to wrap up today's episode than on that note. That was brilliant. Thank you so much for joining, Eric.
Chris, I appreciate it. Big fan of the podcast series and looking forward to more great perspectives. A bit of a transformation and digital strategy wonk. So I love this. I really appreciate you including me.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And thanks to all of you who are listening. If you would like to learn more about the show, or if you have questions, comments, ideas for the show, connect with us throughout social media or visit us online, all at thatdigitalshow.com. And join us next week as we explore another digital transformation topic on That Digital Show. Thanks for listening.